From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. On Saturday mornings, you hear a lot of shouting at the park near where I live. Kids shouting, parents shouting, coaches shouting. Almost always, it's done with good cheer, but every now and again, a cranky adult voice booms out over the soccer field. Coming up on Forum, we're going to talk about the voices kids hear when they play sports, and in particular, what it takes to be a good coach. Do girls require one kind of coaching, and boys another? Is there too much focus on winning and being tough? And above all, what lessons can good coaches impart that help kids on the playing field and beyond? What it takes to be a good coach, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, sitting in this morning for Michael Krasny. In a recent Wall Street Journal essay about the impact coaches can have on kids, actor David Duchovny made the following observation about his own high school basketball coach. "I got better because Coach Burns told me I was already better," Duchovny wrote. "That's what a good coach does. He fills you with belief that may or may not be justified." For anybody who's ever played sports as a kid or watched his own child play sports, coaches can be memorable figures. They're the ones who can make all those cliches about sports teaching you life lessons actually true. But they're also the ones who can take the joy out of the game and turn sports into something sour. So in this hour of Forum, we're going to take up this question: what makes a good coach? What is it that young athletes, boys and girls, really need? And are we doing enough to support and train the coaches who work with our kids? Joining us first to take up this topic, Jim Thompson. He's executive director of the Positive Coaching Alliance, which is a nonprofit based in Mountain View that seeks to transform youth sports by creating positive character-building environment. Jim Thompson, good morning.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Happy to have you join us. Andrea Becker joins us as well. She is assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at California State University in Fullerton. Professor Becker, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Wade Gilbert joins us as well, associate professor also in the Department of Kinesiology at Cal State Fresno. Professor Gilbert, thanks for joining us too.
Thank you, Dave, for this opportunity. Glad to be here.
Well, pleasure to talk with all of you. It's a really interesting topic, and we are going to open up our phone lines and email lines a little bit early today. So begin to thinking about that, if you would, listeners, about how you value coaches, what you'd like to see in them, your experience if you're a coach, your experience if you're a parent, your experience if you're a recent youth who has participated in sports. We'd like to fold all of those thoughts into the course of our hour. But let's begin by talking about what makes a good coach. And Jim Thompson, start us out, because you got interested in this in part because something you saw that you didn't like very much when your own son was playing youth sports.
Yeah, I saw well-meaning adults do exactly the opposite of what would help their kids have a great experience with sports. This topic is, we're not going to have enough time in an hour just to talk about this one question. I was talking last night to Ruben Nieves. Ruben is our Positive Coaching Alliance's director of training, and he coached the men's volleyball team at Stanford to an NCAA title. And we talked for over an hour about this question. But I'd like to just set a little context for it. I think if you don't know what your goal is, if you don't know where you're going, you probably won't get anywhere. Chip Heath has a great book out called he's a Stanford Business School or professor, and he has a great book called Switch, How to Make Change When Change is Hard. And he says one of the things you need to do is have what he calls a destination postcard. If you want to get someplace, you need to have it a really visible image of it that really means something to you. And I think part of the answer to what is a good coach, which makes a good coach, is what is the destination. And for us, with Positive Coaching Alliance, we want to create major league people. If somebody makes it into the pros or college, that's fantastic. But sports is the best place to create major league people. And we talk about triple impact competitors. You make yourself better. You make your teammates better. You make the game better. That's the destination postcard for a high school youth coach. And when you got coaches who are trying to create those kind of major league people, they're going to do a great job.
So you start with that in your view. You start with let's have this experience be something that can truly shape character and have it be something that leads them to becoming better human beings. You didn't say anything about winning. You didn't say anything about the scoreboard. Is that far secondary in your judgment in terms of what coaches need to focus on?
Well, we actually talk about the double goal coach, and the first goal is winning on the scoreboard. I travel around the country, and I jokingly say I'm from Northern California, and I like granola, but I'm really a pretty competitive guy. And learning how to compete in the right way is a life lesson. It also...
So those aren't mutually exclusive. I mean, focusing on winning and focusing on building character go hand in hand?
They do most of the time. That second goal, first goal, winning. Second, more important goal, using sports to teach life lessons. And 99% of the time, they do work together. If you teach kids how to set goals, how to make a commitment to that goal, to work hard to achieve it, monitor their progress towards it, adjust the goal depending on whether it was too easy or too hard, they're going to be a better athlete. You're going to have better teams. And that is a life lesson.
Jim Thompson, Executive Director of Positive Coaching Alliance. Andrew Becker, Cal State Fullerton. What would you add to that? What attributes beyond this idea of creating major league people, as Jim Thompson put it, and winning, what else would you add in to the kinds of qualities a coach has to have to really contribute to the experience the kids have?
I would say that the first thing the coach needs to have is a strong knowledge base. If you don't know what you're doing out there, then you can't really have an impact on young people. And unfortunately, at the youth sport level, a lot of our coaches aren't necessarily trained. And without that training, they don't necessarily stick with their original philosophies of developing athletes. They get caught up in the winning. They get caught up in the emotion and that kind of thing. So I'd start with knowledge.
And is it knowledge of both the sport and knowledge of how to teach the sport?
Knowledge of the sport, knowledge of teaching the sport, knowledge of interpersonal dynamics, working with others. There's all different kinds of knowledge that a coach is going to need to have in order to be effective when working with young people. I would also add that it's about being consistent. It's about being consistent in who you are, in what you do, and how you do things. And again,
is that something you see coaches fall down on, that they're not able to sort of hold to a steady approach?
I think so. I think it's because they don't have a strong philosophy oftentimes established, and without philosophy serves to guide action. And once you don't have a strong foundation to fall back on, then when the losses start piling up, you start grasping for things that will help you win again, you know, with the goal of winning. And in doing so, you're inconsistent in how you operate your program and in possibly who you are.
Andrea Becker, Assistant Professor in the Department of Kinesiology at Cal State Fullerton. Wade Gilbert joins us as well, also in kinesiology at Cal State Fresno. Wade Gilbert, add in from your point of view. You worked for a number of years with sort of the coaching icon of coaching icons, the epitome of good coaching, John Wooden, the great late coach, basketball coach at UCLA. What did you learn from him that also applies to the person who's coaching a 10-year-old soccer team?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a very important question, and I'm taking notes as I'm listening, and I think Jim and Andrea are definitely on the same page. We're all in agreement, lots of similarities. And what we see when we look at it from kind of a scientific perspective, you have to frame it in the sense that a youth sport experience is really an educational experience. And that's what the original intent of youth sport was, to provide kind of a classroom for life, in a sense, for young people. And so if we start from that position, that it's really an educational experience, then there's three things that I'd put out there before I get into a little bit about Coach Wooden in terms of how you define good coaching. The first would be this idea that the essence of good coaching is teaching and learning. And we heard Jim and Andrew talk about that a little bit already. Think of youth sport as a classroom for life, and the outcomes, or as Jim mentioned, the goal that you would expect to have for the kids who participate in this experience could be grouped around broad life skills. If you look to the positive youth development literature, they talk about things such as confidence, the ability to connect to other people, character and moral development, plus, of course, getting better at the sport that they're playing. And then a second element there is the idea of the context. So good coaching or good teaching is kind of context specific. So what might work for a 6-year-old might not work for an 8-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 17-year-old. And even more, what might work with your 8-year-olds might not work with my 8-year-olds. So a good coach really takes time to get to understand and know their athletes and their learners and what works for them.
So that raises the interesting point then, and maybe you can bring in John Wooden at this point, because you'd have to assume that teaching elite athletes at UCLA is quite different than teaching those 8-year-olds, or is it? I mean, are there consistent qualities that any coach needs, regardless of whom he's working with?
Yeah, that's kind of the holy grail. People have spent decades trying to understand that across disciplines in teaching and coaching and athlete development and business. And there are some general principles, but and with Wooden, with Coach Wooden, he definitely always referred to himself as a teacher. He always used to say, "I taught at UCLA." He never said, "I coached at UCLA." And so he approached his classroom was Pauley Pavilion, the basketball court. And he prepared just like any other teacher. He had very detailed lesson plans, weekly plans, season plans. He made time in the off season every year to get better. That's another hallmark or quality of a very good coach. This quest to continually get better and understand ongoing learning. And he had a saying that he used to use, and it's actually the title of a recent book about him: "You haven't taught until they've learned." And that really got to the core of what good teaching and coaching was for him. So I interact with coaches, as Andrew and Jim do, all the time at all different levels. And it's very common for a coach to come in and say, "The kids just don't get it. The kids just weren't there today. Why don't they understand it?" And whereas Coach Wooden would rephrase that or reframe it to, What do I need to do? What haven't I done to help them get it?
Yeah, interesting. Wade Gilbert from the Department of Kinesiology at Cal State Fresno. Jim Thompson, I read in in John Wooden's obituary, actually, that he always carried with him a piece of paper from that had written down something his father had told him as a boy. And on it said, "Be true to yourself. Make each day a masterpiece. Help others." Respond, if you would, to that, and this question really of sort of how we make what Wade Gilbert said, you know, sports a classroom for life, because it can sound corny, it can sound like these great cliches, but help us understand how that can really happen, how coaches can really help human beings help each other become better human beings.
Well, sports is the perfect classroom, as we mentioned before. And part of the reason is that there's an endless procession of teachable moments. Something bad happens, there's a teachable moment there. If you're obsessed with winning, you may miss the teachable moment. Something good happens, there's a teachable moment. So it's the idea of making a game, a practice, a day, a masterpiece really fits with that. How do you create a masterpiece? One of the best ways is to help somebody grow. And one of the reasons sports is so fantastic is because there's fear involved. You're on public display. Maybe there's only 5 or 6 parents watching the game, but for a kid, it's like, "Oh, man, so I'm nervous." That nervousness can be used as a teachable moment.
So is it one of the first times, Andrea Becker, that part of what's so useful about sports is that it's risky? There's you don't know what's going to happen, and being able to begin to contend with that is something that you can really carry with you?
Definitely. I think that uncertainty is a part of life. And if you can teach young people how to deal with uncertainty in the context of sport, then you can help them to deal with that in the context of the real world.
We're joined now also by Bob Foreman, who is president and coach for the San Pablo Baseball Association. He also coaches the West County Spartans football team, which is 10 to 13-year-olds in Pinole. Coach Foreman, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm interested in your thoughts on what we were just talking about, this idea that sports is inherently risky. You never know what's going to happen, and that's part of what makes it an opportunity to learn. How do you deal with that with your kids in terms of having them take from those risky, unpredictable, uncertain situations?
Well, one of the things that I find is that it is one of those experiences that every kid is looking to have. And the way that I started coaching was I had a great experience as a kid. I had 2 excellent coaches. They were not only they, you know, and I was a troubled kid at one time. They were actually people who came into my life, who introduced me to baseball at that point. And I grew up trying to be that person in the kindness, the gentleness, and to be able to teach and to have a personal relationship with every kid. So my secret to being successful as a coach is that I learn every individual kid. If I have 15 kids on my team, I understand each and every one of those kids' needs. And when they come out, I guide them, I direct them in the area. I devote my time to understanding and learning the family history to some extent. Now, you can't really, but you meet parents.
That's really interesting, Coach, because it sounds like you're saying you've got to treat – it sounds obvious in a way that you've got to treat everybody as an individual. But you also often hear you got to treat people the same. There's got to be fairness. It sounds like you're saying, well, not really. You've got to focus how you coach kid A in a different way than kid B. Is that right?
That's right, because and one of the things that I do in my group sessions with my teams, and depending on the age group, I'm going to just go from 11 to 14 at this point, I individually explain to each and every one of them that I know who I'm dealing with because I'm watching you all the time. So when I'm teaching you, I know exactly what you can learn and what you can't learn, and I know exactly where I need to put you where you can help us. And, you know, and if the kids believe that and they believe in you, then it's really not a problem.
You work with a lot of kids who come from pretty challenging circumstances. You were talking to our producer, Tina Lorberg, at sometimes that some of the kids you have are actually the heads of their own household, some of the teens that you work with. How does that factor into this in terms of understanding their specific situations and whether or not you can still have the same expectations for kids who may have to go home to really, really difficult situations?
Well, it's a blessing, really, because a lot of the parents send them, you know, a lot of parents send their kids to youth sports for discipline, just like they do karate classes or whatever. They feel like the kids will get a little discipline, and then it'll be a better kid sometime. So it actually happens that way realistically, because I have a set of standards you have to be able to do in order to be out there with us. And when you get kids who are head of households, who, you know, sometimes you can see a kid, he dictate what happens and how he makes it happen at his own household. So when they come out there, I have to give them discipline, and I have to give them rules and regulations. And some of them will be rebellious for a minute or so, but then if they really want to play and they like me, they understand that they could connect with me, they'll come back. And it could be a kid that's in a gang that don't want to be in the gang no more. So he gets involved in this, and this takes him away from that. And some of them I get so close with that they have relationships with me for years. I mean, all the way through junior college, all the way through college. And I still get phone calls as of today from kids who went to college, who are going to semi-pro teams or still playing baseball in college, football in college. Let me know that they just got a scholarship to Cal. You know, stuff like that. So they stay in touch. You know, they always stay in touch.
It's a great story. Coach Bob Foreman with the San Pablo Baseball Association also coaches youth football for the West County Spartans. Coach, thanks for being with us. Thanks for the work that you do.
Thank you.
Let's pick up on some of what Coach Foreman was talking about. Wade Gilbert, I want to ask particularly about this question of discipline, because that's something that bubbles up a lot when talking about youth sports and whether or not you have to be tough or whether or not being too disciplined is problematic. What's your take on that particular subject and what you heard Coach Foreman describe?
Well, it was you made a good pick with Coach Foreman. It's clear that he models the things that we're talking about, and he really hit on that idea of getting to know the people you're working with. And again, just to tie that back into Coach Wood, and for him, the two most important words in the English language were love and balance. And those are the corners of his pyramid of success, love and balance.
Is a good coach balanced? I mean, I don't think of Bob Knight, for example, is balanced, and he was certainly a good coach. Say what you will about him. I mean, is that really an attribute?
Yes, we're talking about youth sport, college sport, and pro sport are different contexts.
Yeah.
And he, you know, I don't know him personally. He may have had some balance in his life, although you know, in a public forum, you may not think that. But the key, but what he did do, from what I know about him, is he did get to know his learners, his student athletes. He did care for them in his own way, but he did really care for them. In terms of discipline, you're right, that is a hot topic. And again, going back to Coach Wooden, he would always say that equal treatment isn't equitable treatment. So people, you earn a certain type of treatment. And again, life, you know, thinking of sport as a classroom for life, in real life, everyone doesn't get treated the same. You have to earn respect, and you have to earn a certain type of treatment. And,
really,
and that
really
was kind of his approach to it.
Yeah, really interesting point. I see both Andrea Becker and Jim Thompson nodding their heads. So go ahead, Andrea, first, and then to Jim.
Well, I had the same thought about fairness does not mean equal. It means equitable. And coaches can do that not by giving them the exact same instruction or the exact same feedback, but by giving them the same amount of time and energy and interest and making them feel valuable and as a worthy member of the team. And I think that's really important to be a good coach.
Jim Thompson?
Two things. One, I resist the idea that of discipline. Discipline should lead to self-discipline. And too often, coaches are always disciplining their kids, and those kids never learn to discipline themselves. So, and we can talk more about that. The other thing is about balance. I love that idea. And just a quick story, in the NCAA tournaments recently, two coaches, one coach I won't name, whose team underperformed, they got eliminated early. Afterwards, he was asked about it, and he threw his team under the bus. I don't know what's the matter with those guys. They just said, blah, blah, blah. The other coach is Brad Stevens from Butler. His team played perhaps the worst second half
they did.
Of the championship game ever. And afterwards, he said something that's one of the most amazing things I've ever heard a coach say. He was asked, you know, what do you think about this game? And he said, well, if somebody has to lose the way we lost, I guess it's good that it's us, because my guys have the character to deal with it. Now, we think about, where do people get their validation? Everybody wants validation. And coaches want to think of themselves as character educators. But they want validation. And they get that validation mostly from the scoreboard. So that first coach got all of his validation from the scoreboard and threw his team under the bus. Brad Stevens gets his validation from, he wants to win, but he's also coaching the whole person. And so because of that balance, he was able to be there for his team when they needed him.
Jim Thompson, the executive director of the Positive Coaching Alliance. We want to open up our conversation to all of you. We're already getting some comments on our Facebook page about what makes a good coach. Trevor writes in, it's all about patience. Brenda writes in that her 9-year-old son says, a good coach lets you make mistakes. We want to talk about that, about making mistakes and how you contend with that when we come back. And we'd really like to hear your opinions on this subject too. What makes a good coach, and how has that experience perhaps shaped you in your own life? 866-733 6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and add your comments online. We'll come back and talk more about what it takes to be a good coach, what it means to have a good experience out on the playing field when we return. This is Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson, in for Michael Krasny. Today, our topic, what makes a good coach, and how does that experience wind up affecting kids? Our guests include Wade Gilbert. He's Associate Professor of Kinesiology at California State University, Fresno. Andrea Becker, also in the Department of Kinesiology, but at Cal State Fullerton. Jim Thompson, who is Executive Director of the Positive Coaching Alliance. Getting some comments in on our Facebook page, I mentioned Trevor, who wrote in that patience is what he thinks is the key attribute for a good coach. Danielle writes, articulate what's going on, what you see, while staying positive and focused, naming the steps to get to the goal. Sylvia, have a great love for the game they're teaching. It will come across and generate it as well as the child. And again, this comment from Brenda, who quotes her 9-year-old son as saying, a good coach lets you make mistakes. Really interesting comment, I think. Wade Gilbert, you want to weigh in on that, that a good coach lets kids make mistakes?
Sure. I mean, what would you expect from a young person learning a complex skill? they should make mistakes. That's going to be the norm, pretty much. And I think that's important for coaches to understand. And it reminds me, actually, I had a guest speaker in class a little while ago who's a world champion auto racer, and one of the students asked him, you know, would you let your kids get involved in sports? He said, I will make them get involved in sports because, more important than anything else, they need to learn how to lose. Not that he wants them to get accustomed to losing, but to learn how to bounce back from failure, because that's going to be very common, and you have to get good at handling failure. And there is, I'll just throw another concept out there, this idea of a growth mindset. There's a well-known psychologist from Stanford, Carol Dweck, has written a lot about this topic, and all these things you're talking about right now would kind of fit under this idea of a growth mindset.
And Jim Thompson, when we talk about mistakes as being something that you have to be able to learn from, you talked earlier about teachable moments. But is this where you see coaches miss opportunities, that they focus on the mistake as opposed to, or focus on it in a critical way as opposed to what can be learned from it?
Yeah. You know, Andrea works with Ken Revisa, who's a sports psychology professor at Cal State Fullerton, one of my heroes. And he flushes mistakes. And we encourage coaches.
Flushes, meaning?
You flush it down the toilet. Mistakes stink. What do you do with stinky stuff? You flush it. So it's one thing to say it should be okay to make a mistake. It's another thing to give a kid a mistake ritual. Because when you're out there on the softball field and you scoop up the ball real cleanly and you throw the ball over the first baseman's head, all of a sudden, now you get 20 seconds to feel bad. You're no longer thinking about that next play. You're beating yourself up.
I still remember blowing the junior high baseball championship by messing up on a double play, right?
I remember that 5 or 10 years ago.
That would be, I'll tell you exactly. Well, no, I won't. Anyway, close to a half century ago, yeah.
So a kid makes a mistake, looks at the coach, and the coach throws his clipboard down. Kid looks at the coach, and the coach has taught the whole team to have a mistake ritual. Flush mistakes, brush it off, whatever. And he says to the kid, flush it, next play. His teammates say, don't worry, flush it, we'll get it back. That kid is now able to reset and be in the moment, and that is a life skill.
Andrea Becker?
I think that when coaches focus on mistakes, they're training individuals to point out that one little thing that they did wrong. It's rare for a coach to go back to practice on a Monday after a weekend at a ball tournament and re-practice the things they did well. And coaches tend to focus on the things that the players didn't do well. And so it's not surprising then that by the time they get to high school or get to college, that they do focus on that one little mistake that they made.
Here's a comment from Ariel, a 13-year-old that I read in an article on this topic, who was someone who was small and skinny, and the other kids on her team picked on her. And she said, one day the coach sat down next to me and said, even though you can't kick the ball down the field, you're fast enough to be at the other end to receive it. So she said, I should forget about what other people think and stick to what I try to do best and what I can do and what that makes me. And so for the rest of the season, I was the best midfielder on the team. So it's sort of picking up on that coach. It's what Coach Foreman was saying earlier, knowing that particular child and what that child's key skill was.
There's research that shows that if you focus on strengths, you actually get different brainwave activity in kids than if you focus on their weaknesses, a better brainwave activity. So one of the tools that we teach coaches is positive charting. During practice or a game, you've got somebody noting the good things that the kids do. Then at the beginning of the next practice, you take a couple minutes, and each kid gets their moment in the sun. This is what Dana did right. This is what Sarah did right. Those kids have what we call a full emotional tank. They're ready to go to practice.
There was I mentioned David Duchovny, the actor, in the open to the show. He had another comment, which I thought was terrific, which speaks to this. He said about his high school basketball team, it doesn't matter that we weren't close to the best. We were the best we could be. And that's what his coach contributed. Let's hear what our listeners think of this topic. Gordon joins us first in Corte Madera. Gordon, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you. This is a great subject. And I've been through the Positive Coaching Alliance and sort of a fanatic adherent to it. And I coach youth baseball and youth rugby. And in trying to get better, one of the big factors that I've tapped into is at the junior high level, certainly where I coach, peer pressure and peer criticism can be a real danger within a team. And unless you manage it and tap into that and try to turn it around into peer support and peer counseling, you're not going to be as fulfilled as you can as a team.
Gordon, thanks. It's a really interesting point. Wade Gilbert, can you chime in on that, please?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and that is a very real issue that coaches have to deal with. Usually coaches struggle not because they don't know enough about their sport or even how to teach it, but it's the interpersonal skills, helping build that cohesion and helping the kids develop those skills. What's an appropriate way to respond to your teammates and to support them? And that's an area that we, you know, as a country, we need to do a better job at in terms of how we train coaches and help them, because we give them lots. There's no shortage of opportunities for coaches to learn about their sport, take a baseball clinic or take a football clinic. But we fall short, I think, on helping them develop those interpersonal skills and how to teach those interpersonal skills to their kids.
Wade Gilbert joining us from the campus of Cal State Fresno this morning. Let's hear from another coach at this time. And Gordon, thanks for the call and bringing that point to us. Joining us next is Sandy Armstrong. She's executive director of the Marin Rowing Association. Coach Armstrong, thanks for joining us. I'd like to get your thoughts on the question that just came up about whether or not this is something that you can work with, because rowing is a sport where you obviously have to work together as a team. And we just heard both Gordon talk about this point that what's key here is getting kids to work together, that sometimes kids can be more critical than anything else. How do you try to contend with that particular problem so that there is that essence of teamwork?
I think in any sport and in rowing particularly, because it is a sport that one counts on another, but that's in many sports, that learning to manage your athletes, whether that be on the soccer field or on the rowing on the water, I think managing your athletes and how they treat one another, learning about how to be competitive, how to let that come out, and you have to guide that as a coach. You also need to mentor that to make sure that you're not treating people inappropriately individually. So that is how those athletes learn how to treat one another. So I think it's a critical part. You brought up earlier the difference of maybe boys and girls, and I think that there isn't a difference in how you coach those athletes. Boys and girls are certainly different, and you might need to manage those athletes differently because while boys may be more competitive and maybe more pushy, girls certainly have their comments to make as well, and it comes across in a different way, and you simply need to be able to manage that.
Let's go around once on that, because that is something that bubbles up often, whether or not coaching girls is different than coaching boys. Andrew Becker, any thoughts on that?
I would say that the most important thing is to get to know the athlete regardless of the gender and provide them with individualized treatment that meets their needs, their individual needs. And I think if you can do that regardless of gender or race or any of those other issues, and you get to know the person, I think that you can be pretty effective.
In your training, Jim Thompson, at the Positive Coaching Alliance, do you direct things differently for coaches who coach girls and boys?
No, actually, I thought we might when I started this 11 years ago, but I've coached girls high school level basketball, and I've coached boys as well. I would say, and this is big overgeneralization, girls are naturally better at supporting each other. Boys are naturally better at being tough. And so with boys, you need to really work on them on, we talk about making your teammates better. Well, practically, how do you do that? This concept of the emotional tank, if your emotional tank is filled by getting noticed, by doing the good things, et cetera, your teammates are going to play better. So with boys, you really focus on support your teammates, we'll all do better. Girls, the mental toughness piece isn't, again, overgeneralization, but need to work with them. I used to talk with my girls about strong and beautiful. Yeah. You know, we want you to be strong, and so you get knocked down. I had a situation where a girl would accidentally knock an opposing player down. Instead of grabbing the ball, she'd help her up. It's like, no, get the ball. Whistle blows. Now you help her up.
Well, speaking of helping up, the Mallory Moment story.
One of the most inspirational things that's ever happened in sports in my mind. A couple of years ago, Central Washington University playing Western Oregon, Mallory Holtman, first baseman for Central Washington, star player, Sarah Tucholsky, seldom used senior about to graduate for Western Oregon. She hit a home run, first one of her career. She was so excited. She rounded first base. She missed first base, so she turns back on a dime to go back to first, and her ACL pops out. She gets hurt. Mm. She goes down a clump, and she's in pain. Now, the runners ahead of her had already scored, so nobody on her team could go out and help her. It'd be an automatic out. And so everybody's kind of like, what do we do? Because she's still on the ground. And Mallory goes up to the umpire and says, well, could we help her? And the umpire, I guess so. So she gets a teammate, and they carry her around
the opposing the team is carrying this player
around. Not only that, this is a Division II, the end of the season. The team that wins is more likely to go to the NCAA tournament, which, you know, big deal. For them, it was a huge big deal. She elevated the game, which coincidentally is the name of my new book, Elevating Your Game. And we issue, when we talk to athletes, we issue the Mallory Moment Challenge. Sooner or later, when you compete, you're going to have an opportunity to elevate the game like Mallory Holtman did. Are you going to be ready for it?
Great story. Let's hear some horror stories. And Sandy Armstrong, stay with us because it might be good to get your take on these. A couple of people writing in about bad coaching. Jonathan writes, oh, my God, what a destructive force a bad coach can be. A hardline Marine sergeant-type coach I had in high school has affected my life forever. He taught me to despise authority and rebel. He reminds me of Rush Limbaugh. I've been in therapy for years trying to unravel this, and still today, when I come across hard-nosed, unveiling, myopic symbols like my coach in high school, I get angry, and it's a huge problem. Emma writes in, I played soccer for 10 years, and for a few of those, I played with a competitive traveling team. I always loved soccer, but after 3 years playing for my coach, I decided to quit. My coach would yell and swear at us with spittle flying from his mouth, and we were just 10 and 11-year-olds. It was very discouraging, and it took all the fun out of playing. Swearing, Andrea Becker, ever a good idea at kids?
I think it depends, again, on the context and the age of the athlete. Some coaches use swearing as a way to get the athlete's attention. I'd say with the younger kids, it's not an appropriate attention getter. I personally don't believe in it, but I know that some coaches use it sparingly as a way to get their attention.
Coach Armstrong, you want to weigh in on that, swearing at your athletes?
Yes. I think that there are times, but in a general rule, absolutely not. I think Jim talks about winning at all costs, and what does that mean? At all costs to me means breaking that athlete, and whether it be swearing or any other drilling of bringing that person's fault, making it personal, taking it out in front of the team and making points that way, that is breaking your athlete. And those are the athletes that leave. And younger athletes, certainly we don't want to go that route. We want kids out playing sports. It doesn't always have to be about winning the goal. It can be about technique and sportsmanship. And if you follow all of those rules, at the end of the day, you might just find your team finding its success at a race or in a game. So I think that swearing, there are moments, certainly with younger kids, absolutely not. You start to move up through the ranks. At what level is it okay? I think there are moments there.
Here's an email from Hussam, who writes in, to make this story short, my daughter, now almost 10 years old, last year joined a soccer team that lost every single game, literally. And I would add that the team was not as bad as it sounds. Their coach at the end insisted to take the whole team to the final tournament. My wife, though, warned the coach that this wouldn't be a good idea, and he didn't listen to her advice, so we decided not to participate. Indeed, the team lost all four games with painful scores. So what do you say to this coach, and how much should a parent interfere with coaching? Yeah, that's an interesting question. Advice for parents who feel like their coach just isn't getting it. Jim Thompson?
First, I have to say, a little controversy here. We're all agreeing with each other. I think positive coaching is a discipline, and swearing at players is a weakness. And I think it's just not acceptable at any level. Parents, I have advice for parents who have ideas about how to help their kids' coach. I say, take out a piece of paper, write those suggestions down. Put them in an envelope, seal it, and write on the outside of the envelope for when I become the coach.
What about that, Wade Gilbert? What about this parent who wrote in saying that the child's team was losing all these games, coach still made them go to the tournament where they'd lose that many more? If you're a parent in that situation, I take Jim Thompson's point that you want to sort of, back off maybe and hold on to it for when you're in that situation. But if you really feel like your child is not having a good experience, perhaps even being endangered by is in danger because of this experience in some way emotionally, what do you do?
Well, there's a whole wide range of opinions on the role of parents in sport. Some leagues ban parents from practices. Some coaches have a rule, I will not talk to parents. I coach, you watch. There's even T-shirts I've seen around some places, you know, parents, coaches coach, kids play, parents watch. And I think that's a bit of unfortunate in a sense, because parents are a key part of that experience for the kids in many cases, and they're key stakeholders in youth sport. They should have an opportunity to be involved, but as Jim mentioned, there needs to be some guidelines for, that the coach puts in place. Again, thinking of sport as an educational experience, you know, what's appropriate behavior? When is it appropriate to talk to a coach? Some coaches have a 24-hour rule. You know, sport is emotional. I'll gladly talk to you, but, you know, take 24 hours yeah. before you come and talk to me. In terms of that specific example, bringing the team to that tournament, it comes back to the very beginning of our conversation here today, and what is the goal? What is the purpose that that coach had in mind for this sport experience? And, you know, if you have some kind of core values or a mission that you can go back to as a coach, it becomes a lot easier to answer those questions.
Here's an email, and by the way, we welcome your calls. We have time to take some more. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email coming in that says, the real classroom is the classroom. A real coach tells kids that the game's just a game. Only if you're good, you get to play, and there's no way around it. And you're indirectly talking about click games like basketball, football, and soccer. There's so many games with no coaches, so forth and so on. But here's someone who's making the point that we shouldn't elevate this so much. We shouldn't talk about the playing field as a classroom, because the real classroom's the classroom. Jim Thompson?
Well, there are things you just mentioned that, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, you remember something that happened when you were a kid. The lessons that you can learn on the playing field often are much deeper than, I mean, who remembers what happened in the fourth grade math class? But anybody who played baseball or football at that age remembers things. So I disagree. Maybe in a perfect world, we could say sports shouldn't be so important. But the reality is sports has deep symbolic meaning in this country, and we should take advantage of that rather than just saying, oh, it shouldn't be that way.
Andrew Becker?
Just to build on that point, a lot of young people have authority figures in their lives, and their parents and their grandparents and their teachers. The coach is oftentimes that one authority figure that they care what they say, they care what they think. And so therefore, the influence that the coach has on young people might even be greater than that teacher. So it is an opportunity for learning.
And to Maria in San Bruno. Maria, go ahead, please.
Hi, I have a comment and a perspective. I am a parent. My daughter has been playing soccer for about 5 years and through a club, and then prior to that, AYSO. And what we have found to be a really good solution for the ups and downs is that we have a good team manager that really helps to guide the communication between the coach and the parents. We have meetings every 6 months to sit down, discuss the expectations, the things that we are concerned about, and how we can manage that. We also find that our coach is very approachable. He is willing to talk to the parents when they have concerns one-on-one. Some of the parents even stay during practice, and they see the practice so that they can see the development of the players. As we see it, the practices, the coaching really is why the girls are there. The games are just the gravy on top of everything. If they win, fantastic. We love it. If they lose, you don't always win. You have to learn from those experiences and then just figure out how you're going to pick yourself up and move on from there.
Maria, thanks. Thanks for adding that in. Here's a comment I'd like to get your views on from someone who writes in that they have a master's in kinesiology, coached everything from college to high school, and I'm a dedicated learner and always considered myself a teacher. In all aspects of my life, the only people I have an active dislike for are other coaches, which have been one of the great disappointments of my life, of my choice to enter the field. I believe that jealousy and pettiness inherent in competition within coaches to attract the best athletes athletes and build a reputation can lead to behavior that would not be tolerable in any other venue. Obviously, talking Jim Thompson about probably at the high school or perhaps collegiate level, but what about that? I mean, how is that something you've seen as well, that there is a kind of pettiness and vindictiveness sometimes between and rivalry between coaches that can really lessen what can be taught within this arena?
We're talking about scarce resources. Victories, championships are very scarce resources. So when they're scarce resources, people tend to sometimes the worst comes out of them. I want to say a word about leaders, U Sports leaders, athletic directors, board members. You know, everybody wants to be validated. The easiest way to get validated is win on the scoreboard. But what if you're in an organization where the leaders create a positive coaching culture? Culture is simply the way we do things here. And so the coaches who get rewarded, who get honored at the end of the year, the coaches who get to coach the all-star teams aren't the ones who win the most. Those are the ones who build their players the most. So if you can create an environment, and the leaders are the people who can do this, you create an environment in which the entire athlete, coaching the entire athletes gets rewarded. Then you have coaches, you know, when I was with Cupertino Hoops, a league I started years ago, the kids all had their colored uniforms. Every coach had a navy blue polo shirt that said Cupertino Hoops because we wanted to reinforce the idea that the coaches are on the same team.
Coach Armstrong, how have you dealt with that? Because you've worked at the high school level. You've worked in lots of different situations where you've had to deal with other coaches. Is it sometimes necessary to sort of call out other coaches?
Absolutely. I think there are times behind the scenes that rivalries are rivalries, and sometimes that, you know, that makes us better. But when coaching and other coaches or coaches here at Marin Rowing make the wins about themselves, and it becomes about me and not about the growth or development of my athletes, that's the beginning of this problem where those athletes or those coaches are in my way to get what I want. And that needs to be, you need to recognize that and remember that it is not about me reaching a goal that I may have and making these kids come along with me, but building them to a place of being respectful of one another. And there are coaches in this region and across the country in all sports that, well, they just don't speak with each other anymore, and that's too bad. We love to have a mentorship where we get along and we can have coaches come over and other programs and be with them. But sometimes you just have to let that go and let those coaches or let those parents fall away on their own. And I just wanted to make a comment on the parent issue. I think that parents come along with a package, and they need to be educated. Oftentimes they do bring important subject matters to the coaches' plate, and I think that they deserve to be discussed and have their input so that they can learn as well.
Cindy Armstrong, Executive Director of the Marin Rowing Association, joining us today. Let's hear a couple of more callers before we have to wrap up our hour. Tom joins us next, listening in Maryland today. Tom, go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted to make a comment regarding your conversation earlier about language of coaches. I'm a college coach now. I was director of coaching for a large soccer club in Maryland. The bad language is unprofessional. I see no motivation to it. Yelling and screaming serves no purpose. In the end, you want players to make their own decisions on the field because it's a changing situation. Too much coaching from the sideline discourages that.
Tom, thanks. Thanks for adding in your point of view this morning. We just have a few moments left, so I want to just go around once and get each of you to sort of try to bring this together in terms of what makes a good coach, that question we started out with. We've heard everything from being able to allow kids to make mistakes or to have those mistakes be teachable moments, to the importance of knowing the sport itself, to bringing some balance to it, the ability to communicate, know each individual kid is something that Coach Foreman talked about. What else goes into, in the end, this equation? And Wade Gilbert, why does it matter? I mean, after all, it is a game. It isn't something that's necessarily very few kids are going to go on and make their living doing this. So just a quick thought on why it's important and what it is that a coach needs to do to make that importance be something that's real and continuing in kids' lives.
Sure. These are great calls and really important questions. And I'm going to start by connecting back to the caller's comment, or one of the individuals mentioned, you know, why do we care? And it really isn't a classroom. Well, the statistics show that approximately 60 million kids under the age of 18 participate in organized sport every year. That's roughly four-fifths of the youth population in this country. And if you compare it to how many kids are actually enrolled in school, it's about the same, which is kind of mind-boggling. But people who run sport and the people in this room didn't elevate it. It is a core part of the American culture. There's no getting around that. And a recent study that came out by the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency just showed that they polled 9,000 people across the U.S., and the number one positive influence on youth is, guess who? Coaches. Ahead of parents, ahead of teachers. So that's the reality we live in.
Let me hold you there just so that I can get both Andrea Becker and Jim Thompson with a quick last comment. Andrea?
I'd just like to say that athletes oftentimes take on the characteristics of their coaches. So if we want to develop good character and good citizens, then coaches need to demonstrate that themselves. And so I learned this phrase from a sports psychologist at the University of Tennessee. He says, be who you want them to be. If you want them to be respectful yourself.
And Jim Thompson, a last quick word.
Yeah, I think one of the things we haven't really talked about is mastery. We talk about the elm tree of mastery. Give your best effort, E for effort. Learn and continue to improve, and M, bounce back from mistakes. If you master your sport, you can master other things in life.
I want to thank all of our guests, including Coach Sandy Armstrong, who joined us as well today, along with Wade Gilbert, Andrea Becker, Jim Thompson, and Coach Bob Foreman. Thanks all very much for your participation in our program today. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.